this chain of conditions that we're exploring. Its very name, I think you'll use liberative dependent origination. That's a nice name for it, because liberation is its orientation. The entire path is aimed, this causal chain, this causal, the conditioned sequence is headed towards freedom, towards liberation. And so that very freedom, the very place this set of conditions are headed, informs from the very beginning the direction. So right in this juncture between the suffering conditions, the arising of faith, right there in that juncture is what it is we have faith in, this possibility of liberation. And so the faith in the possibility of freedom sets into motion this entire set of conditions. Suffering is a supporting condition for faith. Faith is the supporting condition for delight. Delight is the supporting condition for joy. These being the first three set of conditions, supportive conditions for liberation on our path. The presence of delight and joy in this unfolding set of conditions, and especially so early in this set of unfolding conditions, really speaks to the place of heart, the open heart, the connected heart, the light heart on our path. They're not incidental to the path. They are supportive causes for freedom. Delight, pamoja in Pali, and joy, piti in Pali. And the path of liberation and the kind of description of liberation, or what it is to be liberated, often doesn't seem to have so much heart in it. And even in this sutta, the description of what it means to be free is given right at the very beginning of the sutta. And the phrase used for this freedom is the being, the elimination of, or the destruction of, the taints, sense desire, ignorance, and becoming. Knowing what, seeing what, does the destruction of the taints occur? Such is material form. Such is the arising of material form. Such is the passing away of material form. Such is feeling. Such is the arising of feeling. Such is the passing away of feeling. Such is perception, mental formations, consciousness. For one who knows and sees thus, the destruction of the taints occurs. That description in and of itself doesn't sound like it has much emotion in it. At least in my read of it, it sounds pretty dry or something, but more and more looking into the teachings, there is this quality of heart, quality of beautiful emotions that is shot right through the entire teaching. This chain, this path, the set of conditions leading to liberation, these 12 links. In the first half of that chain, faith. On the surface, perhaps faith doesn't seem to have an emotive quality to it. At least my first reflection of faith doesn't seem to have that, but the connection of the experience of what it means to have faith, what it means to have confidence, what it means to trust. It's an orientation of the heart, it's a direction of the heart. And it has a quality of the heart. This quality of faith has a quality of heart. Almost feeling like an emotion, a wholesome, beautiful emotion. Delight and joy are clearly wholesome, positive emotions. Happiness is another condition on this chain. And then two more that maybe the sound of them doesn't quite sound like they're emotional, but the experience of these can have an emotive quality. In the latter end of the path, disenchantment, becoming disenchanted. Can have an emotive quality, a sense of letting go of the heart, recognizing that's not the way. And so this is something to feel into, the sense of an emotive quality to disenchantment. And another condition in this chain, release itself. Again, there can be the sense of the heart releasing, letting go of the contraction of heart, the heart releasing. And so while these last two perhaps aren't so obviously emotional, it does feel like this, a quality of a beautiful emotional heart opening, heart release, heart connection is integral to this natural, lawful unfolding towards liberation. So how does faith support delight? In different ways, I think, these connect. And the first way, or the first inkling, is that as we have a connection with the sense of the possibility of freedom, that faith being the sense of, oh, maybe it's possible, or it is possible. We see someone who inspires us. We see someone who has some of those qualities, and we recognize there is that potential, that capacity, at least in human beings. That person suggests or says, hey, this just didn't happen, you know. There's practices you can do. There's a possibility. There's a set of things you can do to understand this for yourself. And with that sense of faith, the mind can let go of a burden or a sense of being stuck or caught in this realm of Is there any way out of this suffering? Is there any way out of this suffering? And in hearing, in taking up or recognizing that there is this possibility, the mind kind of has a sense of, oh, it's like it's gotten a really cool drink of water on a hot day. There's a sense of delight. There is a path to guide and support this journey. It's possible. So a sense of possibility, of delight, open-heartedness. The heart can start to relax with this possibility. And so this is kind of the first inklings of delight on the path. So this kind of delight can come just from an intellectual or reflective taking in of information or meeting of a teaching. And this is really where faith begins, is with that meeting of a teaching. Just hearing about it. This engagement, this recognition of, oh, somebody says this is possible. Maybe I could engage in this too. And then the engagement piece. So faith leads to a sense of, with this exploration in particular, with this path, because faith is not just faith in something to believe, it's faith in a set of actions that can lead to freedom. And so with that faith that a set of actions can lead to freedom, the heart is willing or interested in taking up those actions. And so it starts to engage. We start to engage in the path of practice. And so faith inspires a willingness and interest in engaging with the teachings. And this is another pathway that faith leads to gladness. As we engage, as we begin to engage with the teachings, it creates the conditions that strengthen and support a deeper kind of delight. And the Buddha talked about a gradual path, beginning with generosity and exploring the connection of human relationship through generosity and through non-harming. And so these are two practices that, when engaged with, will support the growth of delight, the arising of delight. With generosity, with giving, we start to see that letting go can feel good. That giving a gift, we see perhaps the delight in our minds in thinking about how somebody might receive the gift, the joy, the delight that can come before giving. Then we may see the delight of somebody having received the gift, and then even reflecting back on it, we might see or recognize that was a beautiful thing. At one point, I offered a gift to a friend of mine. She was going off to become a nun in Burma. She still is a nun in Burma. And she had expressed an interest in getting a course for learning how to speak Burmese. And I had practiced with a course and knew a really good course. And so I bought it for her and ordered it and gave it to her before she went to Burma. And there was such delight in thinking about how she might benefit from that, and delight in the thought of offering it to her. And then in giving it to her, seeing her face, seeing her face when she received it, brought quite a bit of delight. And then she actually suggested and reminded me, remember this moment. how wonderful it is to offer this and to have me receive this, because this can support you in the future. And it does. It does. That remembering of those beautiful actions, the recalling of them, can bring delight in the moment. And that generosity also has a way of connecting us with other people, which opens us to and the other beautiful part about generosity is that it is a connection that is in the service of letting go. And that's where the delight of this set of conditions really begins to distinguish itself from our usual kinds of delight. Often we have delight when we get something that we want, or this is a delight in letting go. This is an orientation of the path as a whole, the letting go. And so this training of generosity begins to give us the education that letting go feels good, brings a sense of happiness. And also in this field of connection, of relationship to others, this path of practice, the practice of non-harming, of sila, again, it's the connection that we are exploring, the refraining from acting in a way that would create or cause another person harm. The suttas point to one way this leads to delight, this practice of refraining from harming others. One way it leads to delight is that when someone has or engages in ethical conduct as virtuous, there's nothing for them to regret. They have freedom from remorse. And that freedom from remorse is said to be a natural cause for the arising of delight. There's another word for it, set of words for it, the bliss of blamelessness. So that's one pathway where this cultivation of refraining from causing harm can lead to delight. The freedom from remorse. Another pathway through this same practice is that as we engage in refraining from harming, and the precepts, refraining from taking life, refraining from taking what's not given, refraining from sexual misconduct, refraining from false speech, refraining from intoxicating the mind, that these practices aren't simply about refraining. But they also encourage, incline the mind. Each of these precepts is paired with a quality that is naturally supported as we refrain from that one, as we refrain from that action. So refraining from taking life supports compassion, refraining from taking what's not given supports honesty. Refraining from sexual misconduct supports purity. Refraining from lying cultivates truthfulness. Refraining from intoxicants cultivates clarity. And so again, these wholesome qualities, there's the possibility or the capacity for these wholesome qualities to start to grow as we refrain from following through on these actions. And sometimes we don't really connect with this aspect of sila. I mean, we sometimes feel like, oh, well, if I'm not killing people, then, well, okay, that's kind of the baseline. You know, I wouldn't go around doing that anyway, so it doesn't count somehow in my sila. And yet, it's not a small thing that you wouldn't kill another human being. If everyone on this planet decided to stop killing human beings, it'd be a bit a different place. And so we can take delight in that. There can be a delight. And that creates the conditions and for the growth of these beautiful qualities. And we can take delight in the growth of these beautiful qualities. Sometimes in Burma, the teachers may ask or suggest as a way to support the mind for you to reflect on your ethical conduct. And this, I think it may be a little bit foreign for us at first to actually appreciate ourselves for the good that we do through not causing harm. But it can create this quality of delight, of open delight in the heart. It can support that. Generosity and non-harming puts us really right into the field of relationship. This is another piece, I think, that's important in this path. It's not going to a mountaintop. Some may go to a mountaintop, but it's not necessary inherently to remove oneself from humanity to engage in this path. In fact, the path is interwoven with ways to connect our path to relationship. Both generosity and non-harming do this, engage the relationship. And through that connection of relationship also comes the qualities of the open heart, that in relationship with people, we begin to touch into the qualities of metta, of loving kindness, of compassion, of joy in the joy of others, as well as equanimity and balance of mind. And this connection, again, these qualities of, these beautiful qualities come as we let go of needing, of wanting others to be a certain way, of needing them to prop us up. As the relationship is an open-hearted one that doesn't need anything in return, the heart opens with metta. And that too, that all of these emotional qualities bring a sense of delight to the heart. Feeling this connection, feeling this sense of, I wish you were happy, I wish you to be well, the feeling of just that open, free, generous wish for the world actually rebounds on us and feels really good and brings this quality of delight to our hearts. Suffering supports the arising of faith. Faith supports the arising of delight. Delight supports the arising of joy. So joy as a deepening of delight in a way. Two different words in Pali, pamoja and piti. Different levels of intensity. So faith and delight together, as we begin to engage in the practice and feel some of this possibility of the path to freedom, and see this direction leads towards well-being, leads towards a sense of happiness, leads towards a delight. Our heart kind of begins to want to move that way, wants to move in that direction. And so faith and delight together support a deepening interest in the practice. We see that this path is leading us to a deeper kind of well-being, a deeper kind of happiness. And this happiness that is coming not because we're getting what we want, not because of acquiring things, but rather because of this letting go, of not needing to have, not needing to have people want us to be, to have people think about us in a certain way, or to have certain things in our lives. The happiness of the path, the joy, the delight of the path arises in the letting go. And so seeing this direction, the question becomes, you know, what is it that will support letting go? So our practices point us to look more carefully into the habits and patterns in our minds that kind of are our usual way of engaging in the world, and to look at what is supportive, what is supportive towards moving in this direction of freedom and liberation, and what is getting in our way. So the path, the practice of mindfulness, of wise effort, wise mindfulness, we begin to explore just that question. What is supportive? What supports the deepening, the letting go, the freedom? And what gets in its way? And so we start to understand what gets in its way. I mean, listening to this on the surface, faith leads to delight, leads to joy. Well, between delight and joy, there's a lot of work. And that work is in seeing what's in the way of the joy. What are the habits? What are the patterns? What does our mind habitually do that keeps it stuck in its cycle of headed towards non-liberation? There's a set of qualities that are highlighted in the teachings of the Buddha that get in the way, and those are the hindrances. Sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. Exploring the practice, faith and delight have kind of gotten us in there to look, and there they are, these difficult, challenging emotions, states of mind. We start to directly feel and understand the suffering of these, the dukkha of these. They're no longer necessarily, you know, the practice begins to reveal that, like, sense desire and ill will, for example, our usual way of engaging with those is to follow them. Sense desire, let me get what I want. That's what will make me happy. Ill will, let me get rid of what I don't want. That's what will make me happy. And yet, what this groundwork that has been laid around the faith and the delight is that we begin to understand that not necessarily getting what I want, that may create a certain kind of happiness, but it doesn't have that deeper quality of the happiness that comes with the letting go. And so we get interested in looking at them, exploring them. We see that they are dukkha, and we are interested in understanding dukkha. As Gil said the other day, we see it as a doorway. We see it as something to learn from, not something to blindly follow. And so indirectly feeling that dukkha, turning the mindful attention to those experiences, when we recognize sense desire is arising and know it as sense desire and are interested in understanding what is sense desire, how does it make the mind feel, what kind of thoughts does it produce, how does it make the body react, as we get interested in exploring the experience itself, it's no longer serving as a hindrance, and instead it is serving as the path. And so in this meeting of the hindrances, we call on confidence, we call on faith that it is possible to meet them, to work with them, to recognize them, and that it is helpful to do that, and that it is part of the path. It's not separate from the path. And so we can explore these hindrances in this way of turning our mindful attention towards them, and they become the compost, they become the soil out of which beautiful things arise. And there's another way to work with the hindrances. And that is through the practice of concentration, which has a slightly different approach, well, maybe not even slightly, but a different approach towards the hindrances at times, where if you're practicing a kind of one-pointed connection with the breath, for instance, when ill will arises or frustration arises, at times it's possible, sometimes we have to, when we find that that ill will or that, you know, frustration kind of pulls the attention, and so it's really hard to stay with the breath. But sometimes it's like it can be just kind of like in the background. It's like, oh yeah, there's that thing, but I'm just going to stay with the breath. And it's not like you're repressing that hindrance, but you're just not giving it any attention. Just, oh yeah, it's there, but I'm just going to stay with the breath. Just stay. So we let them go. We let them recede and let our attention come more fully in contact with the breath. And with that, if we're not repressing them, if it is simply kind of letting them be in the background, they will lose strength. And the interest in the primary object, in this case the breath, kind of grows in our mind. And the mind basically loses interest in the hindrances and begins to connect more fully with the breath. So there are different ways, and at some points in your practice, this direct meeting of ill will feels like this, sleepiness feels like this, doubt feels like this may be called for. At other times it may be, oh, ill will, let me just stay with the breath. Let's just leave it to the side. And so it takes some discernment to understand which is appropriate at a given time. In either direction of this exploration around the hindrances, and everybody, I'm pretty comfortable saying, without exception, maybe there was somebody in the world who managed to become enlightened without meeting the hindrances, but I'd say all of us are going to have to. It's not like it's a personal failing when hindrances arise. It's our personal, the various ways that the hindrances come up in our experience is our personal teacher. This is where this mind is getting caught in this moment. This is where the letting go can happen. So we are all going to meet these hindrances. And at some point, when through faith, through confidence, through this willingness to engage and meet the hindrances, or this willingness to stay with the breath and just let the hindrances recede, at some point there will be a moment when the hindrances are gone from your mind. Maybe even just for like a second. And that experience feels really, really good. That is the delight, the joy, the rapture. That is kind of the one of the ways PT is defined, is that the hindrances fall away. The mind kind of like resonates with joy for the term for this one is the bliss of seclusion, that you're secluded from those states of the mind being pulled every which way. The sense of, it's just here, maybe only for just a few moments. But this is the taste, this is the first taste of rapture. PT, sometimes translated as rapture, sometimes as joy, sometimes as delighted interest. And these point to some of the aspects of rapture, that when the hindrances fall away, the mind gets really happy with whatever it's paying attention to. It gets really interested. The breath can become so interesting. The arising of a sound is like, wow, look at that come into being. The seeing of a piece of colored paper, a piece of trash, really, right? On the ground. Poof. When the mind is free from hindrances, it's right there to receive what's happening in our bodies and mind. And the mind delights in that, takes joy in that. So this delighted interest is one aspect of rapture. Another piece or aspect of rapture is kind of a refreshing. It feels like with the mind and the body both, it can get like suffused with a sense of ease, of joy, and sometimes even there is an energetic component to this rapture. It feels like maybe bubbles of delight percolating through the body, or maybe the hairs on your body standing on end, or maybe a flash of energy through the body. Sometimes a showering of breaking waves of physical, mental pleasure. Sometimes a sense of lightness or just of like being a saturated balloon, filled completely with joy, every single cell in the body. So there's different levels of this rapture. And these different levels kind of point to these feedback loops that happen on the path. Rapture is a quality of mind that both supports the development and encouragement of concentration and is in turn cultivated and supported by concentration. And so as we begin to sense the hindrances, as the hindrances begin to fall away, we may get these initial waves or flashes of joy, and as the concentration strengthens, that joy can strengthen. Joy supports the arising. Joy is the supporting condition for the arising of tranquility. The next link in the chain. It may seem like an odd movement, joy to tranquility. With rapture, there's often quite a lot of energy in the mind and body. It's a delightful energy at times, and yet it's sometimes, and as it's experienced for longer, in a way, the mind begins to recognize a subtle agitating quality to that energy. And so it's very natural that the mind kind of begins to gravitate towards more calm, more stillness and more clarity through this factor of tranquility, which will be the subject tomorrow. And so these heart qualities on the path, delight, joy, arising from the orientation towards freedom, not from our usual orientation of, can I get what I want? Can I get rid of what I don't want? A different kind of emotion. And these feedback loops that, you know, as we let go, we more deeply understand that we get like little tastes, little hints of that end point that Gil was talking about the other day. We get little tastes and hints of that, and it feeds back and spurs us on. So let's just sit for a minute or two.